Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals to talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we have attorney Eric Friday. He's back, and we've got some important stuff to talk about. So thanks for being on the show, and welcome back, Eric Friday. And also, we've got Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief as well. And we've got some important topics to talk about. So a shout out to our sponsors, guys. You know, our title sponsor is Gulls at Gulls.com. We also have Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them, we're on satellite radio right now. Arrow Precision USA, Gunlearn.com, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, and TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Also, FishOrlandoBass.com. Now, Eric, you haven't heard this one. So Zach has got a fishing charter in Orlando. So my advice is, if you have to take the wife and the kids or the grandkids, you know, to Disney, keep the car in gear, foot on the brake, let them out, and then hook up with Zach and do a bass fishing charter out of Orlando. And I'm not done. I'm not done, Eric. If you're, and when I say this, you're going to say, well, it makes perfect sense because we're all in Florida, right? So for people watching the show, Eric's in, you said Jacksonville, right? You're in Jacksonville. So he also has alligator hunting. So if you want it now, it's not, you're not killing alligators, but you're catching and relocating. So he gets calls when they, you know, you open up, you live in Florida. So, you know, you got an alligator outside your front door, it gets inside your garage and you can't get it out or whatever, you know, so you can do that as well. So fishorlandobass.com. I'm just throwing that out there just to get you thinking about it. And if you do anything like that, I'd like to get some pictures or video of it too, Eric. You know, I'm sure that'll be worth its weight in gold. A shout out to Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Yates, LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? Guys, we've got a lot of stories. And I tell you what, before I kind of whet the appetite on everything that we're going to be talking about, I'd like to go ahead and just, jump into our main story. And I've got, you know, updates as far as this Charlie Kirk assassination. Horrible story. And we're seeing some fantastic things. I'm talking about good things that are going on, not just around the country, but around the world. You know, when things like this happen, people like us, we think, you know, why would God allow something like this to happen, you know, to someone that was so good? And now we're starting to see the positive effects. Not that it wasn't a tragedy, but there is some good, thank God, that is coming out of this mess that we've witnessed. Now, some other good is purging some bad people. So these articles that I'm going to be talking about with this update from the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com and also Fox13Now.com, we have a Florida fish and wildlife officer or employee that ends up being fired over a troubling post about Charlie Kirk's assassination. So they've come out and said that they went ahead and fired the individual. They terminated an employee for a social media post that made light of the assassination of Charlie Kirk, according to a statement released on X, Twitter. And the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission described the incident as deeply troubling and a direct violation of its core values. And then we've got our next article that's taken from Fox 13 Now. Man who claimed to have shot Charlie Kirk possessed child sex materials, police say. So some people haven't heard this last story. You know, there was some hoopla about them grabbing the wrong guy and then releasing people or not charging him with murder. And so this is kind of the stuff, some of the stuff that law enforcement has to deal with, guys. And in Orem, Utah, it talks about in the immediate aftermath, after the shooting of Charlie Kirk, there were images of a guy being led away in handcuffs. And everybody was confused, right? Many thought that this was the shooting suspect and he'd already been taken into custody. And it wasn't until about an hour after the shooting that officials say that the guy identified as George Zinn, 71 years old, that he had been arrested for obstruction of justice, but that he was not implicated in the actual shooting. So now there's new police documents obtained by Fox 13 News that show what led to Zinn's arrest in the moments after this gunshot at the Utah Valley University campus. And Zinn himself originally claimed to be the gunman. So according to police, immediately after the shooting, Zinn, so this, we got the 71-year-old dude, he goes up to a police officer and he starts yelling, "I shot him, now shoot me." And even after the officer saw his hands, he didn't have a weapon or anything, he still says, "I shot him, now shoot me." And so the cop asked him where the weapon was, and he said he wasn't going to tell him. And then the officer did a quick search. He did a pat down on Zinn. He was unable to locate the weapon. They escorted him to a police car in handcuffs, and he once again claimed to have been the shooter. And he told the officers just to shoot him. And so gets to the police department, asked for an attorney, and then claims he did not, in fact, shoot Kirk. And he claimed that of course, he had already said that he had multiple times. And he said he only did it to draw attention from the real shooter. And he's later being transported to the hospital for medical condition that he had. And he made similar comments. And he added that he wanted to be a martyr for the person who was shot. And then while Zim was at the hospital, the Utah Department of Public Safety says an FBI agent and an agent from the Utah State Bureau of Investigation, they met with this guy, Zim, and he agreed to talk with them. And during the interview, the agents asked him if they could look at his phone. And lo and behold, they find child sex abuse material on it. Now, he told them it was on the phone, but they jam him up for that as well. So he ends up being booked in the Utah County Jail on obstruction of justice, which is got a serious bite to it, a second-degree felony, but four counts of second-degree felony sexual exploitation of a minor. I don't know if that worked out the way that he wanted it to or not, but that's how it worked out for him. Any commentary on this? I don't know if you guys were aware of this or not, but this is the most information that I've been able to find about it. Chief Schultz.
Well, a couple of things about that. The old guy, and I say old is relative because I'm narrowing that gap here. I discount every conspiracy theory that's coming out. You know, there's the hand signals from the security guy on the podium and all these other things. But it's really fast thinking to see a sudden attack and then you immediately create an alibi for the shooter. So I hope that's looked into. That was also the cause of Cash Patel's first blunder, kind of a rookie mistake of announcing that they had arrested the bad guy when it was really apparently this knucklehead. The other thing that is kind of a peripheral issue, and it's particularly true when we're looking at body cam footage of stuff, the crowd really adds to the dynamic. You don't know who in a crowd. If you got three or four people and you're dealing with somebody or an event, you don't know what's going on in the crowd. You know, is there a conspirator there? Is there an antagonist there? Is there a cheerleader for the bad guy? Are they calling for backup? You know, we've been taught for years to call for backup. And now with the advent of ubiquitous cell phones, the bad guys call for backup. And sometimes they get there before our help does. So, a lot of dynamics in this besides just some nutcase allegedly trying to distract. And if it was a distraction, it apparently worked because that's where the attention went while the real shooter slunk away into the woods.
Yeah, unfortunately. So it's just amazing. I mean, it's just a little peek into the law enforcement world. And I'm sure Eric would probably agree with me on what, you know, we have to deal with, you know, and so when people, you know, they get upset about some things that don't get, you know, handled timely or there's mistakes made, this is an example on how easy it is for that to happen. Attorney Eric Friday.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. This case is bringing me reminders of the Uvalde case because there was just a report released the other day. They finally released some of the video from inside Uvalde that showed that the initial reports about the teacher propping up on a door or not locking or not pulling a door closed good were completely false. And that teacher's life was ruined because of bad reports. It also makes me think of Richard Jewell, the shoe bomber. The media's got a thirst for law enforcement to immediately come out and give them all kinds of details. And way too often, those details end up causing a good person harm. I think it's the media has to be more understanding that it takes time to figure out what's going on in these types of dynamic environments. And senior law enforcement officials have got to be better about saying, we're not going to start talking details and releasing information until we know something. So I think there's a problem for both sides there.
Good point. Good commentary, gentlemen. Thank you. Now we're going on to our story with some meat and potatoes. Well, Chief, did you have something you want to throw in there?
Well, were you going to talk any more about the wildlife officer that was suspended?
Well, we can right now. Go ahead.
Well, I know we really don't have time to get into the 2A thing down in Florida, I think. But the number of law enforcement people and teachers and medical professionals that have been involved in some of these slanderous and inappropriate comments about the Kirk assassination. If you're a truck driver or a hardware store salesman, you know, I give all work dignity, but you don't pledge to respect life, regardless of what life that is. But if you're in a teacher, medical profession, law enforcement, you're pledged to protect everybody. And you see this all the time in law enforcement, where somebody shoots at you, and as soon as they go down, you go in and do first aid to try to save their life and get all kinds of help, even at your own risk. So for somebody to violate their oath and have some kind of glee about anybody's death, we have free speech, but it's not cheap.
No, you're right. You're right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, you don't hear, look, this is a law enforcement talk show, and you don't hear us taking up for this fish and wildlife officer. And I'm assuming it was an officer, that was fired. And I'm glad that these schools and universities are taking swift action. It's not like, I mean, sometimes they're putting the person on the porch, but, and I'm seeing that we have a commercial break sneaking up on us. So guys, let me go in and break here. We got some great stuff coming up, a commercial break. Our first one, we'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And you know, as police officers, we know we can get our gear from a lot of different places. And then when you throw the online mix into it, the choices are almost limitless, right? But I want to remind everybody about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And hey, I just saw this morning, they sent an email out, a 20% wide sight sale. They've got a code that you got to type in to get it. But if you should be able to find that. But 20% sight wide, that's incredible. And I just got a new pair of Danner boots that were on sale. So the prices are great and the service is fantastic. Head over to Gauls at Gauls.com. All right, guys, now it's time to talk about one of my favorites, Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And, you know, they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most hands-on, common sense approaches that's ever come along. Head over to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them the Chip sent you. Again, that website, it is ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. And we are joined by attorney Eric Friday, all the way from Jacksonville. And we've got Dr. Joel Schultz from Colorado. And we've been talking about a lot of things, but we've been talking about the fallout after the Charlie Kirk assassination. And there's been some bad. We've seen a bad side of people, right? I mean, we've seen people rejoicing, happy, glee. I mean, just some really horrible, disgusting traits of the human race that I wish we could just stamp out, right? But then we've seen some people that have surprisingly done the right things. You know, in this age of wokeness, we've had companies that have embraced so many things, and they have they've only turned when they've got boycotted or when it's affected the bottom line, right? We have seen some schools and universities, which I mostly consider liberal, just flat out immediately fire and let people go that have jumped on this this bandwagon to praise the assassination of somebody, despite the fact that he's a great guy and he stood for some great things. So I'm very impressed with the way that some of these people have decided to handle it, and there hasn't been a delay. And when it's affected law enforcement, we try to tell it like it is on the show. So you don't hear me taking up for the cop with Florida Fishing Game that was negatively affected by this. So and I think law enforcement was positively affected by this because we got rid of this Yahoo. So any more discussion on this, guys? Are you guys ready to move on to Eric's favorite topic, firearms? We got Brian Spencer, retired sheriff in Colorado, actually. So welcome to the show, Brian, on Facebook. Thanks for chiming in. All right, guys. So we've got our next story. It's an interesting one. Now, look, every time we come out with some whacked out story or some, you know, some Yahoo, they usually think it's from Florida, and you're pretty much correct in that assumption. Eric's laughing. But and this one, listen to this. So TampaFP.com, which stands for the Tampa Free Press. My buddy Brian runs that publication over there. We've got some big news in Florida. I've been having people typing on the stream, you got to cover this, you got to cover this. Well, we are. I'm just hoping to get Eric Friday on the show. I've got the expert. I'm just going to touch the surface of this because Eric, even how well it's written in these publications, Eric is going to do so much of a better job, and he's going to dummy it down for the rest of us to help us understand all the technical stuff. So Florida Attorney General James Uthmeyer has officially declared open carry to be the law of the state following a landmark appeals court decision that happened on September the 10th, 2025. And that is, of course, it's the same day that Charlie Kirk was assassinated, unfortunately. But in guidance issued to Florida's prosecutors and law enforcement, our attorney general here stated that the ruling by the First District Court of Appeal, it is binding on all Florida trial courts, effectively rendering the state's decades-old open carry ban unenforceable. And because there's no other appellate court, according to the article, has considered the constitutionality of Florida's open carry ban since the SCOTUS decision and the famous case called the Bruin decision, the first DCH decision, they say, is binding on all Florida trial courts. Our Attorney General Uthmeyer posted on X Twitter saying that, meaning that as of last week, open carry is the law of the state. It was a unanimous three-judge panel decision in McDaniels versus State declared the ban unconstitutional and a violation of the Second Amendment. And it said, while the ruling technically only applied to 32 North Florida counties within the first district, it said that its official effective date is September the 25th. The Florida Sheriff's Association has already advised all 67 counties, and we have 67 counties in Florida, not to arrest anyone for openly carrying a firearm. And Eric, so I know you've been waiting to go on that, and I know you're excited, and I can't wait because I can feel the energy. And if you could also tie in how this might affect other jurisdictions around the country. I mean, I know that we're just talking about Florida here, but what kind of repercussions is this going to have across the country?
Well, not much, really, because we were only one of four or five states that still prohibited open carry. Almost every state in this country allows open carry. It was us, New York, Illinois, California, and some people include Connecticut in that list, depending on how you define it. But so it's not really going to have that much of an impact outside of Florida. But a lot of the confusion comes in. We have six district courts of appeal in Florida. And one big difference between our system and the United States federal courts of appeals is generally federal courts of appeals decisions are only binding in their jurisdiction, whatever states they cover. Our DCAs are the courts of last resort. They are effectively our Supreme Court for many instances. And so what they say is mandatory to be applied by all of the trial courts throughout Florida, unless and until a different DCA says something else. So we expect the trial courts throughout the state to follow this decision. And if they don't like it, you know, if somebody doesn't like what the decision is, they're going to be the ones to have to appeal it to their DCA. And unfortunately, the fact is we've seen way too many judges since Heller back in 2008 from the Supreme Court. We've seen way too many judges ignore what the Supreme Court's been saying about guns. And we call it the butt guns rule. Unfortunately, a lot of judges just don't like guns and they rule against us. Almost every one of my cases goes up on appeal and usually with me as the losing party, but, that's what happened here. But this district court of appeal got it right. It's very clear. They applied the Bruin test and they said open carry ban in Florida is no more.
So how exciting is this for you? All the hard work that you've done and now the fruits of the labors, is that how you look at it?
Yeah, I started working on this issue in 2010 when we started Florida Carry. We 2011, we got the first legislation passed and tried to pass open carry through the legislature. 2013, 14, something like that, I represented a young man named Mr. Norman. We took his case to the Florida Supreme Court, got an adverse ruling. We tried to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court. We were denied the same day as the California open carry case was denied. And then Mr. McDaniels, just a few days after Bruin came out, he stood there on the 4th of July, engaged in civil disobedience in downtown Pensacola, and he was arrested. And now he has been vindicated that he was right. The trial judge there was wrong. The prosecutor there was wrong. Mr. McDaniels was right. He apparently can read U.S. Supreme Court case law better than the prosecutor there can, and he prevailed.
Wow. That's an incredible story. A lot of people don't know. I actually met Attorney Eric Friday, or became aware of him, because of some actions that his group was taking in the state of Florida. And, you know, right after I retired, you guys, was it Ballast Point Pier that you went to? I know we're coming up on a commercial break here. So yep. Let me just, I'll run with this.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Freeman. All right. This is a fantastic story that you guys are going to have to hear. So we'll tell you more about open carry and what he's doing, but you guys have got to hear the story. Guys, coming up on our next commercial break, stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, introducing Arrow Defense by Arrow Precision at arrowprecisionusa.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about Attorney Eric Friday's favorite subjects. Born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. Aero Defense by Aero Precision demands perfection, because selling for anything less is not an option when your life is on the line. Visit aeroprecisionusa.com for a lineup that matches every discipline, because they basically have something for everybody. And you know, back since 1994, they have been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in the complete rifle arena with Solus bolt actions. And that's not all. Their M4 E1 Pro and their Mod 4 handguards. They hit aeroprecisionusa.com last year, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence, and they're now being tailored for the civilian customer, which means that you can start getting your hands on this primo stuff. And their M5 AR 3-weight platform, spectacular. So don't settle for less, but you can have the best. Head over to aeroprecisionusa.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We are joined by attorney and gun rights activist, attorney Eric Friday, and also Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. We've been talking about the appellate decision in the state of Florida, to where now we are an open carry state. So you guys may remember that we became a permitless concealed carry state not too long ago. And look, there's still restrictions with the law on places that you can't carry guns, or if you can't have a gun. Of course, if you're a prohibited person, a convicted felon that has not had the rights restored, of course, you know, you can't be in possession of a firearm. And there's certain places like courthouses and stuff, and maybe some parks that you can't go to. But other than that, we are open carry now. Now, I wanted to set the stage for how I became of attorney Eric Friday, based out of Jacksonville, in the group Open Carry that he's associated with. And so right after I retired from Tampa Police Department in 2013, and I think it was right after I retired, you had hit. Was it the Ballast Point Pier? Am I right? Yep. Or am I
that's Ballast correct. Point?
And so, look, this is these guys are doing it the right way. They typically will send letters or emails or both to the agency whose jurisdiction they're ready to go in, and they're going to make sure that they are up to date on the law. Now, I was not aware of the law, this particular law, and so it allows you in Florida to open carry if you're walking to or fro hunting, camping, fishing. So that means you can have a gun strapped to your side. You can have an AR-15. I mean, that's what the law says, but, and that's the cutout. So I would have fallen prey to this, but he lets them know what the law is, tells them where he's going to go, when he's going to be there, gives them all the information up front. You think that they would maybe make sure they brush up on the law before he does. And we're not talking about like little ordinances and county statutes. We're talking about state laws. And of course, so they have, I don't think it's improper for me to say that, you guys have gotten judgments in your favor and have used that to kind of fund the movement in order to really educate law enforcement. And that's our bad. You know, I didn't get the training. I got great training in Tampa, and it's one of the best agencies training wise to work for. However, arguably, it wasn't good enough, right? So I love the fact that you, not just what you do, but I love how you do it, because you guys have got a classy way to do it. You hit Miami, and that's when I started getting involved in publicizing that. It was the Miami or Miami Beach or Miami area.
Miami Beach.
And I saw the correspondence that you were sending that was getting ignored, and they just wouldn't. And you told them what you were going to do, when you were going to do it, the date, the time, the location. And they still fell for it. And you weren't trying to have them arrest people and confiscate guns and stuff, or to detain people and put them in handcuffs. You were simply trying to make sure they were educated and to lower the liability of these guys. Because just think, if a bad guy if something, what if they shot and killed somebody under these kinds of circumstances? So even what you were doing was at great risk, but you were doing it for the betterment of really law enforcement. So anyhow, that's how I met you, Eric. And so can you kind of tell people a little bit about, I can't spend too much more time on this, but a little bit more about what you do and how they get more information, especially if they want to join the effort?
Yeah. So I'm general counsel for Florida Carry, and their website's floridacarry.org. We started in 2010, 2011, open carrying while fishing to try and bring awareness to the issue. And we had a theory from the beginning of education before litigation. And so we made the effort to educate. And, you know, I had sheriffs tell me, and there's words you don't like us to use on the air. We had sheriffs use some of those words, telling me their opinion about what they thought of the law, and that they didn't care what the law was. If we came and did this, we would be arrested, we would be prosecuted, blah, blah, blah. Usually a call to the city attorney or sheriff's attorney after that usually got that resolved. But Miami Beach, you know, they said there was a problem. They didn't get the letter, they said. We actually did lose that case, but the loss there helped propel the McDaniels case to where it came out in our, you know, ultimately in our favor. So we lost the battle in Miami Beach, but we won the war. And we also had a policy of, we didn't use long guns at our events until after Parkland and after the Miami Beach incident. So we only used openly carried holstered pistols. The Ballast Point incident, the deputy almost got shot because he reached for the grab gun he could see and grabbed it, but didn't realize the guy was carrying a second one concealed and didn't identify himself as an officer, and it almost got him shot. Fortunately, that did not happen. But, you know, they trespassed somebody from the property, and we ended up, you know, reaching a resolution and settling with the city of Tampa over that case. You know, Miami Beach, when they didn't like how we did it the first time with six guys with holstered handguns, we put 50 people on the South Point Pier with rifles, including ARs and AKs. And they invited and gave us free parking for that event. So, you know, we've tried to do this the right way from the beginning, but we've also been clear that we're not going to let our rights be infringed upon, and where we have a right, we're going to exercise it until we get rights restored that we lost because of Janet Reno in 1987, which is the right to open carry, which we have now succeeded in recovering for the state, and for all of our citizens and all of our visitors. And yeah, there's going to be some legislation this session, we're sure, to try and limit that right in some ways. And, yeah, we actually decided to present a united front from all four of the organizations that work actively in Florida. And we've made clear we're prepared to talk, but we're not going to give up anything that we've earned with open carry. So if they want to make some adjustments to certain laws that probably need to be addressed, we're going to get something for it. We've got to be recognized for achieving this victory, and there's some things that need to happen in Florida law. Our gun laws are not as good as everybody likes to think about the Gunshine State, and the fact that it took us 15 years to get this victory, I think, demonstrates that we've got a lot of work still to do in Florida.
Interesting. Now, Chief Schultz, I know you had some questions for Eric.
Yeah, first of all, I like the term Gunshine State. I don't understand, you know, there's been a lot of controversy in legislatures on the state level around the country over concealed carry. I really don't understand the big concern about open carry. There's no data that would indicate that there's a cause-effect relationship between open carry and criminal activity.
I'm not sure that it's as much and I'm just going to be clear. My biggest opponent for the past 15 years in Tallahassee has been the Florida Sheriff's Association. And I think it's less about the personal beliefs in of the sheriff. And a lot of times it might be about the money they're getting from certain companies and business organizations that really don't like open carry. Yeah. The constant refrain we hear is, well, it's going to affect our tourism. Well, 90% of our visitors come from states where there's open carry. So not sure that they're exactly going to freak out when we become an open carry state. So I think that's just a made up line. The other thing I think it is they're concerned that they're going to have an increased number of calls by, you know, oh my gosh, there's somebody that's carrying a gun walking down the street, because it hasn't been common here since 1987. And so now that they're going to get those calls, at least for a few weeks, you know, Texas, I had to give a lot of credit. When Texas went open carry, the reporters in Texas went back to the sheriffs a year after, and the articles are online, went back to the sheriffs and said, okay, y'all told us about all these bad things that you were going to have to deal with if Texas went open Terry, did it happen? And the sheriff said, the worst thing that happened was we had a brief, short few weeks where we had an increased number of calls until people learned the law and until the novelty wore off, and then it was no big deal. And I think that's what we're going to see in Florida. We're going to see a moment where a lot of people do open carry just to test their rights, and then most people are going to continue to carry concealed. But you know what? I don't have to put my jacket on when I get out at the gas station. I don't have to make sure I'm wearing an untucked shirt when I need to run into a convenience store. We've got things that we expect people to try and pass this legislation to try and limit some of that. Miami Beach, of all people, just had a meeting this morning where they're going to encourage businesses in the city to ban firearms from the business and to put up no gun signs. And I'm very curious what encourage means, because some people might take that as cooperate, or you might not get your business license renewed. So very curious what they mean by they're going to encourage people. And we do have a preemption law in Florida, and it is very strong.
Wow. So some people just don't learn. Wow.
No,
they don't. We all know how effective no gun zones are. So we'll see how that works.
Yep. Victim disarmament zones. My attitude is, if there's not a metal detector blocking the entranceway, there shouldn't be a no gun sign there. Carry should be allowed, period. I'm an advocate that I believe businesses that ban firearms should be strictly liable for third party criminal acts on their property. And businesses that allow firearms should be immune for criminal acts that occur on their property. I think that'll go a long way to making businesses really think. Yeah, businesses are oftentimes, they're scared of two things. They're scared of scaring other customers, and they're scared of the liability of allowing guns on their premises. We need to fix those issues so that they don't have those concerns anymore.
Yeah. And let's face it, if there's a sign in a business that says do not carry, and mostly we're talking about even concealed carry, the only thing that they can do to you is ask you to leave. And then if you don't leave, then you can be arrested for trespass after warning. That is it. So so that is just like, So, guys, we're coming up on another commercial break. When we come back, I want Eric to quickly tell us how people can get a hold of him and track him down. And then we're going to go to our story with the video component. But we got a commercial break coming up involving GunLearn. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianko. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since back in 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder is Daniel Kelly, and if you have your own agency, if you're a chief or sheriff, he's got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that's gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by attorney Eric Friday and Chief Joel Schultz. We've been talking about the new Florida open carry law decision by the court. Wow. So the fruits of Eric's labors have paid off. I don't know. It only took a little over a decade or two. Eric, how can people get more information about attorney Eric Friday and whether they want to have you as a guest speaker or have you or hire you or educate you, whatever? I know that you're very talented. You're very well known, especially now. How can they look you up?
So email address is efriday@kingreefriday.com. Website is kingreefriday.com. Absolutely welcome to find me through the Florida Bar website as well. Eric J. Friday. Websites out there. It's not hard to find. Not hard to find some of the interviews and some of the stuff like this that I've done. And love doing it, Chip. Thank you for having me on for this stuff.
Oh, I love it. And hey, there rumor has it that your parents were big fans of this show called Dragnet. Is there any truth to that?
Nope, not a bit. Just the good old family name. Longtime Alabama folks.
You know, the sad thing is,
but I root for the school on the right side of the state over in Auburn, just so we're
that makes a big difference. Now you got the Chiefs' attention. Yeah, now you got the Chiefs' attention on that one. So, you know, there are people listening to the show that they're thinking Dragnet, which Dragnet, you know, the people that don't even know what the show Dragnet was or that Joe Friday, they never heard of Joe Friday on Dragnet. Isn't that sad?
So my grandfather was a lifetime a police officer, sheriff's deputy in Alabama. And so, the Andy Griffith Show, Dragnet, Matlock, those were staples when I was over at his house.
Oh yeah. I can see why. Yeah. All right. Well, guys, we got a story with a video component I've been holding on to. I can't say I'm proud of this. It's a little bit of a, it doesn't make law enforcement, doesn't make us look too well. But the agency handled it well. It's at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Orange County deputy relieved of duty after accidentally shooting a victim of an alleged home invasion.
Sheriff's office.
You ready?
So guys, this goes down in Pine Hills, Florida. So yeah, Eric, again, another story making us all look bad because it's about Florida people, right? Officials with the Orange County Sheriff's Office say a deputy has been relieved of law enforcement duty after he accidentally fired his weapon, hit the victim of an alleged home invasion last month. Now, I'm chuckling a little bit. The guy's going to be fine. That got shot. Looked like he got shot maybe in the leg or the thigh. The incident happened on August the 23rd, just after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Deputies end up going to a home in Pine Hills after the resident reported that there had been an attempted home invasion. It was not in progress. It had already happened. According to the information from the sheriff's office, the guy in his 40s had fired shots at four individuals he said were trying to break into his home. So the homeowner had been armed. The four people fled the scene on foot before the deputies even got there. Okay, so the drama was gone. So when deputies get on the scene, they announce themselves, knock on the door. There's two deputies. There's a white deputy by the door and white male. They got a black male deputy in front of the door. And so the victim on the inside of the home goes to unlock the door. You can hear him opening up a deadbolt. And the white officer, and I'm only saying white, black to kind of tell you who's instead of saying officer one, officer two, which will get more confusing. So the officer that was closest to the door that had knocked, backs away from the door and kind of puts his hand on his gun when he hears, I don't know if it was just the sound of the deadbolt. I don't know what caused him to do that. But then all of a sudden, the deputy that was furthest away on body cam, pulls his gun out and just fires one round through the door and hits the homeowner. And this is after they had already tried to do a home invasion of him. The bad guys had. So it says that the victim goes and locks the door. One of the deputies accidentally discharges his firearm, strikes the guy, makes a statement to his partner, like something to the effect, I didn't mean to do that. The victim who was not identified by the investigators was taken to the hospital with injuries not believed to be life-threatening. The deputy was also not identified by the sheriff's office, but he ended up being relieved of his law enforcement duties and reassigned to an administrative position. I'll bet. Commentary on this guy's and is this cop's Eric Friday? Is this cop's career salvageable?
I don't make a prediction on whether a career is salvageable or not. What I have an issue with is this is not the first time we've seen this. I mean, what was it, about a year ago we saw the officer in over in the Panama City area that shot a U.S. Army airman who answered his door. We had a case a few years ago in Lake County, Florida. We've had the Okaloosa Acorn shooting case. I mean, I don't know what it is about if it's a lack of training, if it's a lack of, or you know, my concern is there's this idea that, you know, officer's first duty is to get home safe at night. Absolutely laudable goal. There's also this idea that supersedes civil rights, that And there's training out there by certain private training companies that have taught this to the point where officers, you know, yes, every traffic stop's a risk. Yes, something bad could happen to an officer on every traffic stop. And at the same time, I'm concerned that law enforcement has gotten a mentality of that so embedded in what they're being taught that it's causing situations like this where an officer, you know, lacking discipline with a trigger finger, a sympathetic squeeze, whatever it is, takes an action that can be irreversible. This guy got lucky. This particular homeowner and the officer got lucky that it was, was no worse than it was. And I think we've got to figure out what is causing these type of incidents so that we can try to stop them from happening.
Chief Schultz.
Yeah, I don't think this was an intentional discharge. If he really thought, there might be some bad guy behind the door, so I'm going to shoot through the door a couple times and stop the threat, he should have been arrested on site because there's no excuse for that. What I think is, and I think Eric alluded to it, is you can't have that trigger finger inside the trigger guard until you know you're going to shoot, and you're not delaying anything by you know, keeping that trigger finger outside the off the trigger until it's time to shoot. So I think it was a surprise when the thing went off. And I think there were two shots. The fact that there was a second shot, if you're really not got your hand configured where you're really putting something on target, then the action of that weapon can actually make you shoot that second time without really knowing it. So I think it was a complete surprise to this officer. That's my conjecture just from what I saw. I couldn't quite read his body language and I couldn't quite hear what he said or make out what he said. But I think it was, and you know, I think they tell us to say unintentional discharge. We don't say accidental or negligent because that attaches right. some verbiage to it that interprets the fact, but that interprets the facts. But I don't think it was an intentional. If it was intentional, he needs to go to jail. If it was accidental, he needs to be. You said he's reassigned to admin, and often what that means is he's going to end up getting a promotion out of the deal. I don't know. That's the way it works.
Well, look, for my take, I've seen enough of these. I'm not going to say, you know, I mean, it doesn't happen every day, but look, this officer, from what I could tell, his career is salvageable. It's a training issue. Look, there are some flaws in this. Number one, that officer should not have been standing in front of that freaking door. The other officer knocking, he was standing to the side. The only thing exposed was his arm when he was knocking, and then he was back behind the safety of the cement block. So this officer should never allow himself to be placed in a situation where, even if he was startled that he would have, you know, shot the homeowner through the gun. And you bring up a good point, Chief, about, your finger not being in the trigger guard. And look, I would argue you probably could do testing and find out that you've got a millimeter of a second difference between if you wanted to pull the trigger, if your finger's already in the trigger guard on the outside. But it doesn't really matter. You know, you cannot afford with physics and knowing that what one hand does, the other hand is you have a high chance of duplicating that. If you get startled or jumped, like I believe that this officer seemed to do, and you know, he had his finger on that trigger and he did it. I think he surprised himself too. So train this guy. But if this guy did it and he's standing in that place and the other officer didn't tell him to move from his position, that means that there's a training deficiency that agency they need to get on it and get on it fast. If I was the head of that department, this guy would be off the street too until I'm satisfied that he gets the training that he needs to lower my liability when I put him back in the same situation again. So I know that we're kind of on the wounded blue time right now, but it's been a fantastic show. Thank you so much, Attorney Eric Friday, for being on the show, and also Chief Joel Schultz. And I love the work you're doing with Florida Carry. And I know you've got plenty more to do. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org, Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. They also have their summit coming up. I believe it's next week, so make sure you guys check that out at thewoundedblue.org. Guys, our sponsors, please support our sponsors. They go to the great lengths to bring this quality content to you. We have Gauls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, Gunlearn.com, Medicare.life, SafeGuardRecruiting.com, TwoBells.com. They built a new online store, and FisherOrlandoBass.com. Thanks for the support. We look for you guys back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern.